This podcast may contain language that's not appropriate for all listeners. Listener discretion is advised. Today we're going over Adam's rib. So if you haven't seen it and you don't want us to ruin it for you, you might want to pass on this one and we'll catch you next time.
Hey, gentle listeners.
Are you ready
for one dry kiss? Welcome to One Dry Kiss, our cussy, irreverent love letter to rom-coms, where in the month of March, madness, 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 we recap one criminal based on a true story rom-com-ish kind of movie. Yeah, that's it. That's really concisely put, I think, on my part.
They need a new subcategory, rom-com-ish.
Yes. And today we are doing the 1949 Katharine Hepburn and Spencer Tracy classic, Adam's Rib. I am here with one of my feminist icons, Miss Tamara Cosio.
And I am here with Corinne Edding, who I must love a whole bunch because I watched this whole damn movie for her. And then made notes on it. Yes, yes. This might be the first movie ever that I give a movie a much, much lower rating than Corinne. Stay tuned to find out.
I'm so excited.
Oh, I'm not. I am really not.
Oh my gosh. I'm very excited.
That makes one of us.
You know what else I'm excited about?
All this rain we're getting?
No, I'm really not excited about that. I feel like I'm living in Oregon and I don't like it.
Ooh, same.
I am in 2 weeks, two glorious weeks, more like a week and a half. I am going to have my trial CPAP machine because guess what, Tam?
That's right. What?
I got a sleep test, and for all of my life, I've been feeling really tired, and it's been worse for the past couple of years after I had COVID, but I have severe sleep apnea, and severe is a number over 30 interruptions of sleep per hour, and I have 52. So
wow.
It's almost like having every minute, minus 8 minutes, every minute having my sleep disturbed, which...
I remember you told me that.
Yeah.
And the first time you told me that, I'm like, oh my God, Corinne, you're going to get this CPAP machine and you're going to put it on and you're going to get like the most restful, relaxing night's sleep that you ever had. And you're going to wake up the next day and be a fucking genius because you're going to actually get more than 8 minutes of sleep a night.
I'm basically feeling like I'm going to have superpowers once I get a CPAP machine.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think I will now have a letdown because I feel like I'm going to get superpowers, but I still like strongly believe somehow that once I get the CPAP machine, my life is going to change. Maybe my hair will like turn back to the dark brown that it always was. And I will have this immaculately clean house and be cooking myself meals all the time and stuff like that. I don't know, but I will tell you if I do end up getting several good nights sleep a week, I will have easily 6+ hours back of my life because I take a good 2 hour nap on Saturdays, Sundays, and Tuesdays. So,
you know, speaking of sleep.
Yes.
You remember the other day when I was saying that I fall asleep at a certain hour and then at 10 o'clock, my body is like, bink, guess what? You're awake. You're going to be up until the wee hours of the morning. Yeah. You know what cured that?
What?
This movie. I fell asleep at 9:45 watching it. Woke up, rewound it, was like, whoa, 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 and then started watching it again and fell back asleep promptly at 10:07 and was like, fuck it. I'm just going to go to sleep and watch it in my very bright office during my lunch break the next day. So this movie cured my insomnia. So thanks, Adam's Rib, for that.
I'm so excited. Now I know what to give you for your birthday. So that
this is my CPAP machine. Adam's Rib is my CPAP machine.
Oh my gosh. I do think it would be worth it to get a sleep test just regardless. But yes, I'm so glad that I helped, you know, lull you to sleep.
9:45. I have not been to bed at 9:45 since I was like 11.
Oh my god, this is amazing.
Unless it's 9:45 in the morning and I pulled an all-nighter. Oh. Yeah. That was special. I was like, holy shit, what time? Fuck me. Okay, this was a fluke. This was a fluke. Concentrate, concentrate.
Oh my god. Oh, I am so glad that I gave us this movie to watch, because you have just given me so much joy in my life right now. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Speaking of which, Tamara, mm-hmm. did you fall asleep before you were able to make a synopsis, or?
No. Nope. I made a synopsis. I plowed through that one. I did want to give the fun fact of what this movie was based on.
Yes.
Adam's Rib was inspired by the real life story of husband and wife lawyers William Dwight Whitney and Dorothy Whitney, who represented Raymond Massey and his ex-wife Adrian Allen in their divorce. And incidentally, after the Maseys' divorce was over, the Whitneys divorced each other and then married the respective Maseys.
Right.
Which, spoiler, did not happen in this movie.
No, did not happen in this movie at all. And I actually think it would have been a more interesting movie if this had happened.
Oh my god, yes, yes. And they just took Kip right the fuck out of it because he was annoying as hell.
Oh my god, Kip was such a creeper. But I have a theory as to why it was based on it, but then did not really have anything to do with it other than having a husband and wife lawyer, which is...
Because it was the 50s, the 49s, 50s.
The Hays Code. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Which the infidelity is... and yes. why Kip was a closeted gay that turned out to be a philanderer. Well, you're going to hear all about this, gentle listeners. I know it might be Greek to you now, because if you haven't caught Adam's Rib and just...
The banger that it is.
The banger of a movie, Adam's Rib. And if you're not inclined to watch it after my glowing endorsement, you're going to find out real quick who we're talking about.
Okay, but before you go into the synopsis, I have to say, a full disclosure, in the last movie that we did, I Love You to Death, which was what kicked off our series, which you were also very grateful to watch, but to not get you to go to sleep like a sweet little baby.
Yeah.
You mentioned how finding rom-com-ish kind of movies that are based on a true crime kind of thing, difficult to do.
Right.
And thus, Adam's Rib was added into the mix, as well as I Love You to Death. I was like, I actually know two movies that fit into the qualifications.
I can't remember what Larry said the other night, but he was like, oh, what was it? Because I was watching Adam, I was watching Adam's Rib and complaining loudly about it. And he was like, why don't you guys do a month that's dedicated to, and I can't remember what it was, but I was like, really, Larry, you really think that that's going to want to, I want to like almost ask him. Cause it was just like, so it was like the true crime based on real stories. And I was like, you really think there's going to be like that many stories out there? And he's like, yeah, well, how many stories do you guys have with the real life based crime rom-coms? And I'm like, fair.
Well, yeah, no, we have a total of four and that is all. And yeah, we weren't like, oh, we're going to do this again next year too. Like we've just run out of movies. Yeah. So I had an idea that we'll top Larry's whatever idea.
I can go ask him.
which is movies that we are glad aren't based on a real life story. I was thinking like Weekend at Bernie's. Excellent movie that we are glad is not based on a real story.
Yes.
I'm sure that we could find plenty of other ones as well.
Possibly Mannequin.
Yes. Yes. Creepy.
Oh my. Too much sleep's making all my fucking things I meant to say fly to my head. But to continue on with the show, synopsis.
Yes.
What did Corinne write to me this week? In the synopsis portion, she said, Timmy! Synopsis, please! You the best.
Yes.
And here is my best synopsis. Adam and Amanda Bonner, played by Spencer Tracy and Katherine Hepburn, are a couple of happily married attorneys. That is, until the fateful day when Doris Attinger, in a fit of rage, attempts to shoot her husband and his mistress after catching them in the act.
Ooh.
When Doris is brought to justice, Adam is appointed as the prosecuting attorney, and Amanda, who feels very strongly about the case, does everything in her power to be chosen as the defending attorney, which she ultimately is. What transpires is a banana-sod defense and court case that pits the Bonners against each other in the courtroom and eventually seeps into their home life. Tempers and opinions are brewing throughout the city and throughout Tamara as she reads the 1949 movie poster that promises this film is the funniest picture in 10 years and the IMDb rating, which gives this flick 7.4 out of 10 stars. Well, you have to be the judge as you find out with us who really wears the pants in the family of Adam's rib. I felt like I was losing my fucking mind today for two reasons. First, this movie, because I did look at the ratings because I'm like, who likes this movie? It was nominated for an Oscar for the screenwriting.
Yeah.
Are you fucking kidding me? And then I saw the reviews and how many people liked it. And I was like, I almost want to transport if I had a time machine. And they're like, where do you want to go? Back to 1949 to fucking talk to some people and find out why they like this movie so much. That was the first like out of body experience I had where I was questioning my own judgment. And I'm like, do I make any good decisions around here? I don't like a movie that everybody likes. I'm questioning my whole life and my reality right now. Now that I have thoroughly questioned my entire life, Corinne, are you ready to dive into the stimulating movie that is Adam's Rib?
Yes. Speaking of stimulating, I think that two things context-wise for this movie is Katherine Hepburn and Spencer Tracy were in the peak of their popularity during this period of time, and they were considered to have this great, you know, banter couple.
Mm-hmm. I was gonna say, I was also like curious to see how old they were at this because they look like they're older, but sometimes back in the like 40s and 50s you can't tell if somebody's older if they've just smoked heavily their whole life,
right?
And so Katherine Hepburn was 42, I was glad to see, and Spencer Tracy I think was 49. So it's like a 7 year
wait what, there's only a 7 year difference between them? Wow.
I think if I calculated their birthdays correctly, because I thought he was much older than her, which I'm like, par for the course. That's typical Hollywood. But when I saw that it was only 7 years, I'm like, oh, I guess that's pretty standard even nowadays.
Wow.
Like,
yeah.
Huh. He does look substantially older than her, or she just looks really good. She took bomb for 42.
No, I mean, she looks good. He looks like an old man, though. So, I mean,
yeah.
Old man, take a look at my life.
But he always kind of looked old, even in his younger days.
Yeah,
so,
exactly. Yeah. And the second thing is this movie actually had like a lot of implied kind of sexy romp kind of humor, as well as it was like actually super feminist, which very surprising. So, for the time. For the time, Pam. They didn't really have women lawyers back then.
I know. When she was in court, I like looked really quick. I'm like, were women allowed to be on the jury? Yes, yes, they were.
Yeah, but like that's another thing is in this movie, they actually had women in the jury. They had a black person on the jury.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there were a lot of kind of, this was a more diverse movie than I Love You to Death, which was done, and a more progressive movie than I Love You to Death, actually.
Your pitches are bouncing off of me like rain right now because I'm like, but it was stupid. You can try to pitch all the angles you want about how great it was for its time, but Catherine, never mind. We will get into it. We're getting ahead of ourselves, Corinne.
And
yes.
This is not one of my favorite movies of like of all time or anything like that.
Thank God.
Yeah. I like a lot of old movies, and this movie is not one of those movies. So, just to be clear, I do love that it made her fall asleep. So I may end up getting it her for her birthday, just in case she ever has a rough night and she just really needs to hit the sack. But yeah, I may end up getting it for Tamara for her birthday. Don't tell her, gentle listeners. I want her to be super excited and surprised.
I am glaring at you through this phone right now.
She's giving me a dead-eyed look.
Yes. Can you please start on this movie and stop threatening with buying it?
Okay.
I am so glad I didn't buy it, by the way. I'm glad I just paid the $3.99 to rent it, because if I had this in my possession, in my, like, fucking Prime Video arsenal, and it wouldn't let me delete it, because I don't know if they let you delete movies that you buy, like, I would probably just cancel my account and start all over again. Other movies be damned.
Oh. I love this so much. Okay. Adam's rib. I'm ready for the journey. Are you ready for the journey, Tam?
Just go!
You have your toothpicks to keep your eyes open. It's 1949 and the world is black and white. A blonde woman wearing a large black hat. Oh, and she is played by Judy Holliday, who is an amazing actress. She has some of my favorite movies, and she died young. But,
oh,
I know.
She was phenomenal in this. I do give her that.
Yeah. She's this just fantastic comedic actress. This would not be my favorite movie, even close to, that she was in. But yes. So, anyways, a blonde woman wearing a large black hat, a suit dress, and munching on candy bars stands across the bustling New York City street from an office. She sees a familiar man coming out of the office and ducks behind a newsstand, so she's out of view. Although the silver sparkly garnish on her hat seems like a giant beacon to me.
I know. I'm like, is that like a tinsel tree branch off of a Christmas tree?
That's exactly what I was thinking.
And it's not like tastefully tucked in the band around the hat. It's like dangling right in front of her face.
Yes, that's exactly what I was thinking. I was thinking, oh my gosh, it looks like a Christmas tree branch, but in silver.
Yes, and then she's got like that little kind of net, that very, very see-through net. And every time she sees her husband, she pulls the net like over her face. But the Christmas tree branch is practically like poking people in the eye. And I'm like, subtle, real subtle.
I know, it was like she had like da 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 like on her head. Yes.
Or like a no 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 no.
So she follows him on to the subway, getting off on the same stop as him and following him to an apartment building. She manages to sneak in a few minutes after him and wanders the halls until she hears some snazzy jazz music. And you know what snazzy jazz music means? Sex. That's what it means. Mm. Sex.
Mm-hmm. Because Barry White wasn't singing yet.
I know. And she thinks to herself, this must be the place. Quickly, she pulls out a handgun and manual and starts reading the manual.
Yes, she does.
I was like, Judy, blink, blink, blink. What are you doing, girl? Blink, blink, blink.
You were sitting there for so long in front of the building eating a candy bar. That might have been a better time to read that there manual in your hand. But I digress. Corinne digresses, too.
I know. Well, this whole first portion is the reason why there should have been a mandatory waiting period for guns in New York City at that point in time. It's a fantastic argument for it. It's pretty obvious that this woman doesn't know how to handle a gun. But that doesn't stop her from shooting at the door before bursting into the apartment. She sees the man she followed and a woman canoodling on a couch. The man jumps up from the couch, throwing the woman behind him. Unlike me, whenever I'm with somebody, they end up throwing themselves behind me or like pushing me in front of them and using me as a human shield. But that's beside the point. So this guy, He throws the woman behind him and trying to reason with the blonde. Now look, Doris. But Doris is in no mood. Shut up! Shut up! My dear husband! And Doris closes her eyes and starts shooting randomly around the room with her gun as the other woman screams, Help! Help! Moira! Help! Doris manages to shoot her husband and the other woman runs out of the apartment. Meanwhile, Doris finally opens her eyes, seeing her fallen husband. She gets down on the floor next to him, crying and hugging him. She didn't want to kill him. How very I love you to death.
Seriously, second movie in a row. I'm gonna kill you. And then when I think you're dead, oh my God, my husband, my poor husband.
The next day, see, the headline of the paper says, Wife shoots fickle mate in presence of love rival, arrested on assault charge.
And where does one of those papers end up? Well, on the doorstep of Adam and Amanda Bonner's apartment. Adam Bonner, played by Spencer Tracy, is the assistant district attorney for New York City, and he, much like Corinne and I, is not a morning person. Amanda Bonner, played by Katherine Hepburn, is a defense attorney, a morning person, and they both have the luxury of a maid making them breakfast in the morning.
Ooh.
But the maid only brings a luxurious breakfast tray to the bedroom door. Amanda actually brings it in onto the bed, so she gets partial credit, which she does, and places the meal next to her hubs, who is sleeping. And thanks to the Hays Code, a code of morality for films that prevailed from the 1930s to the 1960s, Amanda has her own bed in the same room as her husband's. Yes, because married people did not sleep in the same bed between 1930 and 1960, according to movies. However, she fully ignores that bed, sitting on top of the covers of his and prepping her breakfast slash getting Adam to sit up in bed by wafting coffee under his nose. They companionably read the papers together when Amanda starts chuckling. Well, how about this? This woman, Doris Attinger, shot her husband. Adam asks, Is he dead? She reads a bit further. No, critical condition, he replies. Pity. As she scans the article and stabs at the paper emphatically with her finger. Well, there you go. He was running around on her. I don't blame her. Adam shakes his head. It's not okay to do that. I don't appreciate contempt for the law. Just then, they're interrupted by the maid, Mary, coming into the room and letting him know, You better get going. The traffic's really heavy today. The couple springs off the bed and start getting ready as Mary picks up the breakfast tray along with the discarded papers. She reads the headlines and nods approvingly, remarking, Atta girl, as she leaves the room. And poor Mary, how pissed is she that she has to clean up the breakfast crumbs and possibly the stains that are all over their covers, as it seems like it's a frequent tradition of them having their breakfast in bed.
I don't know. If I were Mary, I'd be like eating the rest of their breakfast. So
so when I first got together with Larry, he was a bed snacker.
Oh no.
Oh my God.
No, no.
Yeah. We don't have the luxury of a Mary, sadly.
Yeah.
So I would get into bed and I'd be like, what the fuck? I feel like I'm almost at a beach with all the crumbs and mm-hmm. shit. I was like, no. We're not doing this anymore.
Yes. No.
That's why when I saw them in bed, I'm like, poor Mary. Like, she's probably got to strip those sheets a couple of times a week. Because
mm-hmm.
I'm a messy eater. Most of the stuff falls out of my mouth and lands on my chest. So I could just imagine what gets on their sheet.
There weren't dustbusters then, so she couldn't just take a handy little hand back and just go zoot, zoot, zoot.
Oh. I just had a thought. I can't imagine what gets on their sheets. Obviously nothing, because they're sleeping in separate beds. Ha, ha, ha.
On Adam and Amanda's drive into work, Amanda talks about how she doesn't think this woman is going to get a fair shake as men get allowances that women don't. Adam disagrees, stating, Well, I think Sunlight's from the South. Jeez, Corinne, come on. Well, I think women get certain advantages over men. Amanda self-righteously states, Well, we don't want advantages. We want equality, and women have to deal with an unfair double standard. She cuts swiftly across a lane of traffic, abruptly stopping, and drops her husband off at his job, leaving a trail of very unhappy drivers in her wake. When Adam gets into work, he looks at his list of cases and is chagrined to find that he's in charge of prosecuting the case he and his wife had just been talking about. He's pissed, but sucks it up, figuring it's an is-what-it-is type of situation. However, what he doesn't know is that his wife, who has her own law practice, is intentionally pursuing this case as she wants to make sure that the woman who shot her husband gets a fair shake. Amanda asks her secretary, Grace, what do you think of a man who's unfaithful to his wife? Grace responds distractedly, oh, not nice. Amanda then asks, okay, but what do you think of a woman who is unfaithful to her husband? The secretary grimaces, hussy! She's a hussy! Amanda asks, why is a man not nice but a woman a hussy? Grace shrugs, I don't make the rules. It's just the way things are. Amanda's telephone rings and it's her hubs, Adam. The conversation starts off affectionately and with a bit of innuendo. Winky, winky. Until he says, would you believe it? I got assigned the Attinger case. That woman who shot her husband. I was going to turn it down to keep the peace at home, but the boss wants a quick conviction? I made it more complicated.
All these hard legal words that were...
conviction. And he thinks I'm the man for the job. Amanda is pissed. Why, I can't stand people like that. She has no chance of getting a fair trial. Adam starts chuckling affectionately, and I'm sure if he had been in the room with her, would have patted her on the motherfucking head. He says, oh, you sound so cute when you get cozy.
Oh my God. That's feminism!
Tamara just gave me the glare that she gave me when I said I was going to get her the movie for her birthday, so I could tell she really likes
that
statement.
It was a different glare.
Amanda hangs up on him and turns to Grace asking, you ever hear of the straw that broke the camel's back? Grace responds, many times. Amanda points at the phone. Well, it just happened again. Amanda will not stand for the district attorney's office to railroad that poor woman. So first step, she's got to become the lawyer to one. I close my eyes while I randomly shoot around a room. Doris Attinger.
Did they have a kid?
You're talking about Adam and Amanda, right?
Yeah, the Bonners.
Yeah, no kids.
Okay. When I fell asleep, I could have sworn that they had a kid. But then when I watched, like, I rewound it and I watched the rest of this movie and I'm like, I'm sure that they didn't have a kid.
No.
I think it was just like me, like, drifting off to sleep and dreaming half the movie while half watching it. Because I'm like, that'd be fucked up if they have a kid and they never mention it, you never see it in the rest of the movie, and then they have that whole long home movie where they're at their farm and their kids know it. It's also interesting that they didn't have kids. Scandal.
Scandalo.
The first place Adam goes since he's prosecuting counsel is to the hospital to interview Warren Attinger, the poor, wronged victim of this violent crime, who incidentally has the gall to have his mistress in the hospital room and make statements like, my wife is awful, crazy woman, always has been.
Ugh.
Adam asks him, why'd you marry her then? And we at ODK ask why he chose to have three kids with her then.
Mm-hmm.
But Warren brushes these questions off with, I don't know, why does anybody get married? What I want is for her to get put away for a good long while. Should Warren have been shot at? No. Does his irrational behavior due to his lack of responsibility for his very callous family-wrecking actions play a huge part in this whole fiasco? Yes, it does. And while Adam questions Warren at the hospital, Amanda questions Doris at the female jail. I don't know what to call it, so I called it female jail. The women's penitentiary. This doesn't go well either, but for entirely different reasons. Amanda offers Doris a cigarette and she responds, no thanks, I don't believe women should smoke. And when Amanda tries talking again, Doris cuts her off. I don't think they're very ladylike. Amanda takes deep breaths and continues her questions, finding out that Doris has been married 9 years and 4 months, has three kids, ages 8, 7, and 6, which means she was basically pregnant for 3 years straight. And Doris also shares, I knew Warren was off of me when he started batting me around. That was 11 months ago. He even broke a tooth. The interview proceeds, but Doris is a hard client to get straight answers of. She either avoids the questions or gives rambling answers. But what we do learn is before the incident, Warren was gone for 4 nights in a row. And when he didn't come home, Doris got upset. Very upset.
Mm-hmm.
She's okay with a night or two here and there, but 4 in a row is too much.
Mm-hmm.
So she brought a gun, and they were nice enough to give her a manual to learn how to use it. Then she waited outside her husband's office all day, not reading the manual to the gun, apparently, but that's neither here nor there. at the whole stress and waiting of the situation made her hungry. And Corinne admires a woman who knows when to take snack break, particularly one that involves two rare burgers, an entire lemon meringue pie, and a nutty candy bar.
All I said was lemon meringue pie, but yes.
I added everything else. Because if this movie has one thing, it's that this woman does have a healthy appetite. For a second, I thought she was pregnant, and I thought that was going to play in to her case. Because there was all this back and forth about, well, I will save it for later because we haven't gotten to the argument part yet.
Yes.
No, but she wasn't pregnant. She just had a healthy appetite. Now, mind you, a great appetite is better if it's not in between stalking your husband, thirsting for his blood, or hungering for revenge. But you know, sometimes a girl's got to do what a girl's got to do. Doris, however, doesn't realize the weight of her situation. She wants to go home to her kids, and Amanda doesn't promise that she'll be able to make that happen, but she sure is going to try.
Go, Amanda, go.
No, no.
That evening, Amanda is helping Mary get ready for the dinner party Amanda and Adam are having. The dining room table is looking super fancy with several candelabras with giant, long candles. Like really, really tall candles. And the fine china is out on the table. Adam comes home and Amanda rushes him upstairs to the room. No, gentle listeners, not for that.
Are they pushing their beds together? Are they pushing their beds together?
Ooh. No. They are quickly changing into their evening wear for the dinner. As Amanda changes in her dressing room that is on the left side of the room, Adam pulls a chair into the center of the bedroom and places a hat box on it. Hat packs.
Hatbacks.
A hatbox. A hatbox. Hatbox on it. And then he moves into his dressing room on the right side of the room. They companionably chat as they're both getting ready. Amanda comes out in a beautiful black off-the-shoulder dress, sees the hat and gushes, "Oh, it's simply beautiful. I may have you come home late all the time if this is the result of it. Someday, they're going to build a statue of you somewhere."
Adam. Yeah, they better calm down with that dirty talk, boy. That is getting too spicy in here.
Super spicy, I know. After watching this movie, you're like, "Larry, it's time."
They're going to be building statues of you somewhere, huh? Huh? I think the raciest part of this movie was when she was wandering around with the back of her dress open and she even like went downstairs to greet her guests. And I'm like, "Your dress is still open. Your dress is still open. Your dress is still open." And she was just like, la-di-da-di-da, la-la-la-la. And then she's finally like in the middle of her fucking guests going, "Will you please zip me up?" And I'm like, this movie makes no sense to me.
Well, and then the men who were trying to zip her up really were not competent at it. And I was just like,
"Oh, they couldn't see the zipper."
Is it really that hard? Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know how to work one of these things. Confounded women's clothings are so complicated.
Newfangled zipper things. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Adam is feeling pretty darn good about himself until they're downstairs. The party is starting. The guests have all arrived, including two judges and their wives, Amanda's parents, and their across-the-hall neighbor named Kip, yay, who makes inappropriate comments to Amanda and knows how to play the piano. Well, that's a reason to invite him to your party, right? Right?
No, it's not. He also has a date that he pretty much like verbally abuses the whole time that they're there.
Oh, that was just witty banter.
Oh, right.
Yeah, yeah.
Witty banter. Mm-hmm.
One of the judges asks Amanda what she was doing in his neck of the woods that day. And as Adam walks into the room holding a tray full of martinis, Amanda casually/not casually mentions, "Oh, I was doing a bit of ambulance chasing. I just got the case of a woman who shot her husband, Doris Attinger. I'm going to defend her." Adam spills the martinis all over the floor, and before he has a chance to say anything, Mary announces, "Dinner served." And Amanda smiles guiltily at Adam as she takes the tray out of his hands and announces to the guest, "Let's go to the other room, shall we?
I wonder if that could really happen. If a husband, and I mean, I guess it has, mm-hmm. but if it's frowned down upon, if a husband and wife are the prosecution and defending attorneys of a case.
Well, you know, I think that there's, if two people from the same law practice are doing that, then they do what they call, and I'm not sure how politic this term is, but like a Chinese wall, that's what the term is, and which means that they are legally bound to not talk about the case or, you know, share information with each other. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's probably something like that in husband-wife instances as well.
Yeah. After dinner, Adam and Amanda share with their guests a silent home movie they put together called The Mortgage, The Merrier. They're all sitting around in their theater room and watch the old, like, it was one of those projector-type movie mm-hmm. dealios that I still kind of wish I had. Large screen TVs just don't have the nostalgia of that type movies. It shows their country house, Bonner Hill, a sprawling country estate that includes a tennis court. The couple are goofing around with each other under various scenarios, including them paying off their mortgage, while Kip, lovely Kip the neighbor, makes unfunny commentary. Like in one shot, Adam is happily crouching down with his two boxer pups, and Kip counts the canines. 1, 2, 3. Essentially calling Adam a dog. Then he calls another guest a loudmouth, says the movie is sickening, and finally stands on his head when the film accidentally flips upside down on the screen. He seems fun. I mean, I'm sorry, I mispronounced insufferable.
You know, I don't drink, but if I had to attend a party with Kip and I was stuck in that room for hours with him, I would start hitting the bottle. Thank you very much.
Yeah. He put me in mind of this one guy when I used to work in retail at a high-end store. He'd come in periodically. I think he was more than likely a stand-up comedian, a really bad stand-up comedian. And he would come in and try his material on me under the guise that he was buying something. Ugh. And I was like, please just stick the stapler right in my eye and just get the fuck out of here. Because you couldn't tell him to leave, but his jokes were so bad. And there was like shots fired because they would just come one right after the other, mm-hmm. right after the other. And he was trying so hard and it was just painful. And that's what I remembered when I watched Kip. I'm like, he's just shooting out zingers, if that's what you call them, left and right, and they're all just stupid and mean-spirited.
Yeah.
And the people around him are kind of like, ha, 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 he's such a card. Like, oh.
But I will say about the guy who was sending those zingers on over your way, he was trying to impress you. He wanted your love, Tam. Why weren't you picking up on that?
Because I didn't want no part of his love. You could keep your love. And please see yourself out the back door, sir, the same way you came in. Thanks. You're wasting my time. I am a captive audience, and you know it, which is kind of a sort of torture. Oh. You know I can't be rude to you, and I can't send you away, so you're just, like, pelting me with your bad fucking jokes.
Oh, you mean impressing you?
Oh, I'm not traumatized at all. I'm not traumatized at all.
Yeah, he was impressing you with his funny, funny jokes.
Anywho. Adam looks pissed, or as Amanda puts it, like he's wearing a growl on his face. But is he pissed at Kip's stupid antics, or is he mad that his wife chose to defend Doris Attinger, knowing he was going to be the prosecuting attorney? We find out that evening, as they're getting ready for bed, the couple argues loudly. Adam pleads with Amanda to stay out of this Attinger drama. But Amanda points out, Doris needs a good defense attorney, and shouldn't she have the same justice that's usually reserved for men? And we're not going to let this poor girl be put away just because she was born a female. I had to put in some of this dialogue because Corinne didn't, because it's fucking bananas what she's arguing in court, and I don't quite understand it. But we're not there yet.
Hey, look, I knew that you were going to add your own flavor to portions of this, so this, I'm delighted.
Adam loudly retorts, I'm going to cut you into 12 little pieces and serve you up to the jury. Did this turn into a Lifetime movie with a crazy twist? Sadly, no. He's just blowing off steam and Amanda knows it. She smiles at him affectionately and says, good night, Pinky. And they hug each other sweetly before going to bed. The next time we see Adam and Amanda, they're both in court doing jury selection. Warren Attinger and his mistress are sitting in the peanut gallery, and Doris Attinger gets let in to sit next to Amanda. When Adam sees Doris, he just about chokes because on her head is the ever so lovely hat that he bought his wife the night before. Did Amanda think the hat would make her client presentable? Or did she just not want her to wear the tinseled tree branch mess of a hat from the beginning of the movie?
Or did she want to, like, fucking poke Adam and give him some shit?
That's fucked. Amanda, you're trying to smooth things over and then you throw that little wrench into the machine? Okay. Once again, Adam's wearing a growl on his face. And if this were a cartoon, he'd have steam coming out of his ears.
Mm-hmm.
Once everyone's settled, the first potential juror is called onto the witness stand, and Adam questions him. He seems suitable enough. However, when Amanda questions him, she asks him if he believes in equal whites.
Equal whites, huh? Are you turning this into a racial thing?
Equal whites.
Equal whites.
Equal rights for women. The potential juror looks like he has smelled something bad, and he states firmly, I should say not, and he's dismissed. As the next potential juror gets sworn in, Adam signals to Amanda. He purposely drops his pencil, and she does the same. Under the table, they look at each other, and Adam smiles at her softly and blows her a kiss. She waggles her eyebrows and lifts her skirt a little, which effectively distracts him so that when it's his turn to question the juror, he bumbles and switches his words around, which is his tell. Amanda knows he's flustered when he stammers, and it's going to be a long day.
That evening, when Adam gets home, Amanda is waiting for him with a drink in hand and checking in with him to see if everything's okay between them. Right now it is. They chat companionably on the couch while Amanda reads the paper. Beep, 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 beep. Social standards unfair to the female sex, declared in court by Mrs. Bonner. Amanda.
Yes, they are. They have been and they will be for a really long time. But what does that have to do with this woman shooting her husband? Feminism and equality have nothing to do with the crime at hand. I'm sorry. Please continue.
I will say that particularly, I would say at that time, if a man were to protect his house and home by shooting his wife's lover, that would be seen as something more noble. But the woman doing the same thing is considered, she's just like some desperate nagging woman who's beating down her husband. That kind of a thing.
I'm going to have to research this, because when they say protecting house and home, I imagine somebody coming onto their property or finding somebody on their property, which is like that law where you can protect your property or you can whatever the fuck it's called. But
the woman's the property here, see? The wife is the property.
Uh-huh. Conversely, and I was thinking about this a lot when I woke up long enough to watch the movie, is that there's two sides of the story, because especially on our lovely favorite crime shows that we watch,
yeah,
namely Let's Go to Court, either that one or My Favorite Murder, they were talking about a couple of cases with really horrible wives and mothers that committed crimes, were pregnant on the stand when they were being accused of something, and then got off because they garnered sympathy from the jurors.
Right.
So the door swings both ways. So although, like, the man could be let off because he's protecting his house and home, conversely, the woman could be let off because, oh, she was hysterical and she's pregnant and she needs to take care of her family, so we can't possibly lock her up. She's got a bun in the oven.
I agree with you that that does happen. And also, there are a lot of women who end up in jail for domestic abuse situations where they've killed their partner defending themselves and they have ended up being strongly penalized for it.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And that happens till this day.
Yeah.
But I don't think I'm familiar enough with the court proceedings of like that time.
Yeah.
But she's, the stuff that she says, I'm like, I'm sorry, what?
Yeah. Amanda is delighting in the kerfuffle this whole court case is causing, but Adam, not so much. When they're gathering dinner together, Adam does the big ask. Hey, Pinky, do me a favor, will ya? Drop the case. I'd be fucking pissed if my husband were asking me that. But I don't have a husband. And also, Amanda just chuckles and tells him, I can't. The case is far too important. And I know deep down you agree with me on this. Otherwise, we wouldn't get along as well as we do. The doorbell rings. And Adam knows who it is. But he answers the door anyways. Why? Why would you do this? It's Skip, who holds up the newspaper with the headline in front of his face, which was social standard unfair to female sext declared in court by Mrs. Bonner. Skip, who continues to make passes at Amanda and has even written a song about the demise of Adam and Amanda's relationship called Farewell Amanda, which has the lyric, it all was great fun. It's done. It's through. Good times. Once good old Kip is done with the song, he announces that he has to skedaddle, but lets Amanda know, I'm on your side. You've got me so convinced I may even become a woman. Good night, all. And he heads for the door. Adam says to Amanda, and he wouldn't have far to go either. Amanda shushes him and he asks, why are you shushing me? Kip slides back into the room like Tom Cruise, dancing around in his underwear and socks in Risky Business, whispering, because he can hear you. And then he heads out for real this time.
And Kip was reading super gay in this scene. Like, I was like, okay.
Yeah.
That's why he's such a sassy pants, because he adores Amanda. Like, that's his... That's his boo. That's his fag hag. Can you say that? Is that politically correct to say anymore?
I don't think it is anymore, but, you know. Okay. Yes.
Well, whatever the new term is for that. And then he probably doesn't think that Adam is good enough for her for whatever reason. So he's like, honey, let's just go gossip and chop it up. And then sees Adam as like, ew. Like, that's the definitely the vibe I was getting from this.
Yeah.
Which is why it was bananas. Later on, like, I can see somebody, a gay man, writing a song for his bestie that he adores and even making it catty towards a husband that he doesn't care for.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, this makes sense now. Kip is gay and he's sassy as fuck and he loves Amanda and does not like Adam. Okay, good.
Yeah. So it is at this point where Kip makes a bit more sense to me.
And everybody. Does it last? Unfortunately not.
Yes, as well as Adam tolerating him. I think he's supposed to be gay.
Yes, exactly. Because he even says he doesn't have that far to go to be a woman.
Yeah.
And I'm like, so he knows he's in on it. He's like, this guy's harmless. I tolerate him because he's my wife's friend, even though he like jabs at me every so often.
Yeah, even though he's just insufferable, excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he's supposed to be gay, but due to the Hays Code, he couldn't be gay. So they only innuendo it by questioning his masculinity and have him be a theater person of some sort. And then hetero Kip up by having him come on to Amanda. However,
not yet.
Well, no, but he's like, he says stuff like, oh, I want to kiss you and, you know, different things like that, like in earshot of the husband, you know.
But if he was gay, you know.
Right. If he's gay, it has a totally different tone.
Right.
It was like when I was working at the San Francisco Convention and Visitors Bureau, there was a guy there who, you know, he wore salmon suits and he talked like this. And he would say like kind of sexually inappropriate things to me. But I was like, oh, he's gay, like whatever. And then I found out that, no, he's straight. He dates women. And I was like, ew, 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 ew. So when he was standing in front of me and he had his like fucking little ass like goatee or whatever. And he's like, do you know what this is called? And I was like, what? He's like, a flavor saver. I was like, oh. Ah. But then when he's straight, I'm like, ew, 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 ew. HR, no.
Oh, God.
So context is everything. And I think the only way that Adam would be okay with the way that Kip behaves towards his wife is if he knew good old Kip liked the lads more than the ladies. And still, Kip is a total creeper throughout this movie.
that, oh, what's it called? The Hays Code just fucked this movie from one end to the other. Mm-hmm. Ugh. But back then they didn't know that. So it still got nominated for an Oscar. Yeah. Morality is key.
Yeah.
Anyways, back to the court case. We next see Miss Kane, Mr. Attinger's mistress, on the stand. She claims that there was no hanky-panky going on between her and Mr. Attinger. He was just there to collect on my insurance policy and go over another insurance policy with me. Mm. When Amanda asks Miss Kane what she was wearing, it turns out she was wearing a black negligee, slippers, and a ribbon.
Oh!
You know, the huge. Definitely a ribbon in her hair. Amanda presses further, asking if Mr. Attinger had ever touched her beyond the moment when he tried to protect her from gunfire, and she says, absolutely not. Amanda contests this. Are you sure? Remember, if you lie, that's perjury, and you could go to jail. Miss Kane finally confesses. Yes, we did. We shook each other's hands a lot, and I say, with handshakes like that, who needs to have sex? Okay, wait, no, Corinne says that. Mrs. Kane says they shook hands, and Corinne wrote, with handshakes like that, who needs to have sex?
Yeah.
Yes, indeed.
Because she said, we shook each other's hands a lot.
Uh-huh. Did you close your eyes like his wife did with the gun when you were trying to shake that hand and accidentally shake something else, perhaps? Mm-hmm. Maybe?
And I was just thinking, you know, this is all so innocent. I mean, Larry wouldn't mind at all if you received a male insurance salesman into your apartment wearing your black negligee. And because you got the ribbon in your hair, it just,
as long as I have the ribbon in my hair, it's fine.
Yes, yes.
Like, the ribbon lets you know we're here for business.
Yes.
No hanky-panky.
No
hanky, with the ribbon in my hair.
No hanky-panky as long as there's that ribbon in your hair.
Yes, exactly. You gotta know what time it is. Did you see my hair accessory, sir?
Oh, well, that's like adding another, like an entire barrier around you, obviously.
Right.
Yes.
Right. Next up, we have Mr. Attinger on the stand. When Amanda questions him, we find out that he doesn't give his wife gifts. He beats her, criticizes her, and he fell out of love with her 3 years ago because she got fat. And she is most assuredly not fat.
No.
And if she gained weight, perhaps it's those three children she popped out consecutively.
I know.
Amanda finishes her questioning with, do you consider yourself a good husband? And he admits, yes. Wow. Apparently my standards have been wrong this whole time in finding a good man. Corinne, you have your standards too high.
Uh-huh.
I understand why you're still single.
Yes.
You got to be okay with him beating on you on, yes, the occasion, calling you fat, and being gone at least and up to four nights, mm-hmm, in a row. Yeah.
Can you imagine being left alone four nights in a row? Like, when your husband is not like a traveling salesman or works on an oil rig or something like that, and you're just like, oh no, he's supposed to come home at the day after work, but you know, sometimes he just like goes out, and then you just don't see him for a few days, you know, and I got three kids that I'm taking care of all by myself.
I mean, a part of me was like, I can't believe that she tolerates him being gone 1 or 2 days. But at the same time, the way their relationship is, it's probably a welcome break.
Uh-huh.
I mean, like, no, you go ahead and you stay out there. I don't need to see you or get my tooth knocked loose.
Exactly.
Anywho, then Adam questions Mr. Attinger, and the wounded husband testifies that his wife beat him and yelled at him and waited till he was asleep so she could pummel him when he was defenseless. Adam then adds nonchalantly, did she stay out all night? Mr. Attinger says, no, but I wish she woulda.
Ugh.
Their relationship sounds like a hot mess, but score one for Adam in proving that Mrs. Attinger was not an angel either. Mm.
No, he doesn't wish he would have, because who would have taken care of the kids? He would have had to.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness. That was one thing I used to say when I was in my 20s, and that this is going to be a hot take, and I do not stand by this statement anymore, but I was like, I would love to get pregnant and have some guy walk out on me, because I would take that baby and leave it on his doorstep and be like, here, honey, now you get to deal with it, and then disappear off the face of the earth, which is why I don't have kids, because in my mind, I'm like, I would totally fucking do that.
Gentle listeners, Tamara does not have any missing children, FYI.
No. Oh, how many kids do you have, Miss Cosio?
None that I know of.
During the second day of court, the score may be reduced drastically because the next day, Mrs. Attinger is on the stand. She testifies that she threw a pot at her husband out of frustration, but when he said he was going to leave, but wouldn't tell her when he was coming home, instead responding, "Mind your own business, fatso." I don't actually blame her for the pot. I probably would, too. At that point in time, in the tenseness of my relationship with fucking Mr. Attinger, fuck off, Mr. Yeah. Attinger.
Mm-hmm.
And she didn't see him until several days later when she decided to stalk him and found him in Miss Kane's apartment. Mrs. Attinger testifies, "I didn't want to kill anyone. I just wanted to scare Miss Kane. I have 3 children and she was breaking up my home." Her voice quavers and she bursts into tears on the stand, instantly becoming a much more sympathetic character than her husband. Amanda, done with her questions, sits down and Adam takes a turn at Mrs. Attinger, stating, "Go ahead and cry, but why don't you tell us in between your sobs who you're crying for? Is it Miss Kane, an innocent bystander to your sordid domestic failure? She was wearing a ribbon in her hair, after all. Or is it your husband, driven ill by your shrewishness? Or is it for your 3 children, cursed with an unstable and irresponsible mother?" Finally, Amanda objects on the grounds it's prejudicial to the defendant, but the fucking judge says, "Oh, what can it hurt?" And I'm like, the prosecution has testified, badgering the witness, not actually asking a question. Save it for closing remarks, you motherfucker.
Motherfucker.
However, the rules of law go completely out the window when the judge continues, "But get on with your question." So Adam states, "Your husband has testified that you have frequent bouts of ill temper." And Amanda springs up from her seat. "Your Honor, I've had enough." And in response to her husband bellowing, "Oh, what you gonna do?" And Amanda approaches the stand. "You're painting the defendant as a lunatic of some sort. Mrs. Attinger is a fine, healthy, noble wife and mother. May I remind the court of the words of the poet Congreve? Heaven has no rage like love to hatred turned, nor hell a fury like a woman scorned." Oh, hell hath no fury like a woman scorned, huh? Bet you didn't know that came from Congreve.
No, you can't see it, but my eyes are rolling so hard in the back of my head because men scorned are not great either.
Tamara was on her edge of the seat when she found that out. I'm sure she was just like, gotta stay awake now.
When I found what out? Oh, yeah. When I heard that, I'm like, riveting.
Yeah. See?
Uh-huh. No, I was more like, riveting.
Now, I would say this court case has gone completely off the rails, but there is more yet to come, gentle listeners. Fear not.
Yes. Plenty more where that came from.
Yay! That evening at home, things seem to be okay with Adam and Amanda's relationship. Adam is laying on the massage table as Amanda gives him a back rub, massages his scalp, and gives him a light smack on the ass to test if he's relaxed. He's not. When it's Amanda's turn, Adam turns on the radio, and what's playing? "Farewell, Amanda." He turns off the radio and Amanda chuckles. "That song has been playing all the time. Looks like Kip has a hit on his hands." Adam complains, "I even hear it when it's not playing." And Amanda starts singing, "Farewell, Amanda. Adios, adios, adieu." As Adam rubs her, she likes to poke him.
Mm-hmm.
And Amanda ribs him. It's all well and good until Adam gives her a firm smack on the ass, which sends her springing up from the table. He looks at her puzzled. "What's the matter? You don't want a massage? What do you think Amanda's problem is? Thoughts, Tam?"
"Well, it can't be considered a smack because he didn't leave a mark on her. So it's fine, right? Fine."
"Sure, yeah. It was done on the outside of the towel instead of underneath the towel. Yes."
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it was just a love tap.
All right. Okay. Okay. Good. 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 Yeah. Well, we will find out definitively what Amanda's problem is after the break.
And we're back. And it winds up the smack is not all in good fun as Amanda responds, "Fuck the massage. You meant that I know a smack from a slug and I don't want to expose myself to typical instinctive masculine brutality. You really sore at me, aren't you?" Adam protests, "Oh, don't be ridiculous. I mean ridiculous." Amanda responds, "See? See, that proves it right there." That's his tell. He's once again flipped his words around, much like we do here at ODK. Adam finally admits, "Okay, I am sore. You're having too much fun down in that courtroom. You're shaking the law by the tail, and I don't like it. I'm ashamed of you, Amanda. We've had our differences, but I've always tried to see your point of view. But this time you've got me stumped." Amanda's beside herself. "You're not trying to see my point of view," she starts crying. "You're not trying to see me at all." Adam looks at her angrily. "Oh, here come the waterworks. The old female tears. Well, I'll tell you what, I'm over it." And he leaves the room as Amanda continues to cry. Eventually he comes back and he does what John Gotham in his relationship books call bids. He asks, "Do you want a massage?" "Bid one." "Turn down." He tries again. "A drink or some food?" He receives a more emphatic no through her tears. Frustrated, he asks, "Okay, then, what do you want?" And she swiftly, from her seated position, kicks him in the shin. He yelps and she angrily states, "Let's all be manly!" And storms off in her dressing room to change in a huff.
In a huff!
Well, fuck all. That... The violence is spreading to the attorneys.
Mm-hmm.
There's smacked asses and kicked shins.
Oof.
And the next day in the courtroom, the couple continues to battle it out. And here's where things really go off the rails. Amanda has filled the courtroom with women to testify that women are equal and deserve equality under the law. A sound argument, you might think. No, no. I'm just being sarcastic. Adam protests, and the judge, mainly siding with him, says, "We aren't extending this case out to months. Pick three and that's it." Amanda works within the constraints, having a very accomplished female doctor testify, a forewoman who is in charge of 383 employees, and the icing on the cake is Miss LaPere, who's in show business. She's played by Hope Emerson, a 6'2" woman who did a strong woman act, was a vaudeville performer as well as an actress. But back to Miss LaPere. She demonstrates a tumbling act she used to do, and the court is riveted by her tumbling feats. But the former strong woman downplays it and calls it, just a corny old act. Then talks about something she used to do that wasn't corny. She used to have another act where she'd lift several men up at a time. Amanda asks slyly, "Can you lift any man?" Miss LaPere assures her, "Well, of course." So Amanda follows this with, "Can you lift a..." And I left this in because Corinne kept spell checking. Lift kept coming up life. "Can you life biner? Can you life boner?"
I think it was auto correcting it to fucking life. Auto correcting it to life.
Just like the other day when I was trying to write, like, what the hell was it? Fucking podcasting. And it was kept spell checking to podcast interestingly. And I was like, how does podcasting transform into podcast interestingly?
Oh my gosh. That was so funny. I was like, that's really interesting that she put it like that.
And then I tried to type, no, I have tried to write podcasting and it fucking auto-corrected again. And I'm like, you know how it says your phone learns based on your conversational tones?
Podcast ingredients.
Okay, podcast ingredients. That's better.
Yeah.
That just is going to defeat my whole argument. So I'm like, if your phone learns from your conversation, and we keep saying how interesting our podcast is, like that makes sense, but I don't know why the fuck it thinks that our podcast has ingredients. So that's another thing altogether. Anywho, after Amanda asks if Miss LaPere can lift Mr. Bonner, not life Mr. Bonner, she gestures to her husband, who vociferously objects, but as he approaches the bench, Amanda gives Miss LaPere the go-ahead to life him up, a.k.a. lift. And before he knows it, Adam is being lifted up in the air by Miss LaPere. The courtroom bursts into laughter, and the judge, looking Adam straight in the eyes, says to him, "Get down from there!" While Adam apologizes, "Your Honor, I have no control over..." He trails off as Amanda has let Miss LaPere know that she should let him down, which she does. Okay, so what was the point of her bringing all those women in to prove to the court that women are just as capable of as men?
Yeah.
And again, what does that have to do with the crime at hand?
Well, I feel like in her closing argument, she brings it around. However,
okay.
I do not feel like her bringing the parade of women in to prove that they are just as capable of men was actually an effective argument in any way, shape, or form. But we did get to see Spencer Tracy lifted up by a strong woman, so there was that.
I don't think a lot of her arguments were effective because I was like, I'm sorry, what? Okay.
Well, like throughout the script, I'm like, does anybody actually do this in court? That's the wrong argument. Yeah. I'm like,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Like you can't make somebody see if somebody thinks that men are more superior than women, parading 1,000 women in front of them that are capable and have the same jobs and whatever as men is not going to sway them, honestly.
No, but it will irritate your husband who's on the other side of the...
And then, so what are we doing it to actually get this woman off? Or are we doing it to irritate your husband? And if that's the case, can like Adam just say like, you know what? Fuck this. Can somebody please take over this case? I'm out. Like, I know that you said, and I kind of agree when he was like, don't take this case. Why can't he do the same and just walk away?
Mm-hmm. No, I think what he should have done is said to his boss man, hey, my wife is defending the defendant. Can you please put somebody else on the case? Which would make sense, wouldn't it, though?
Yes. And then they're also like when they get home, they're arguing about their points of view or the fucking inequality. And it's oh, my God. It's to me, it's like so convoluted and interlaced and not a very like neat little package that I spent most of this movie going, what? I'm sorry, what? Anyways.
You mean a powerful feminine treatise? Yes. Yes, Tamara.
Oh, yeah. That's what I meant to say. Absolutely.
That evening, Amanda comes home smiling. She's got a package in her hand and announces cheerily, hello, thing. She doesn't hear a response, so she enters the living room where Adam sits morosely, drinking a martini. She sits next to him and tries pouring a drink for herself from the shaker, but he only mixed enough for one.
Or he drank them both.
Yeah, or he drank them both. That was something else I considered, too. She ignores this and says, sorry, I'm late. I got you this. And she offers him the package, but he silently walks away. She follows him around the apartment from room to room, but he is sulking and not having it. Eventually, she gets him to break as he goes into his dressing room and starts packing up a suitcase. He rants, you have gone too far this time. You have no regard whatsoever for the law, and I believe in the law. Laws, good or bad, should be obeyed, and if a law isn't good, it should be changed, but it shouldn't be blown apart like you are doing. I regret marrying a modern woman. I believe there are two separate sexes. He throws some clothes hastily into his suitcase and says, you don't respect me, do you? She responds, not at the moment, no, because she thinks he's acting like a baby man. He's a baby man. Adam continues his diatribe. You know marriage is a contract. It's the law. But the way you've been behaving is uncivilized. People look at us now and laugh. You've fouled up our marriage. And what blow you've struck for women's rights or whatever your objective is. This is the part that where Tamara agrees with him. I don't know. But it has split us right down the middle. I want a wife, not a competitor. If you want to be...
Then give up the fucking case!
Seriously. Then give up the fucking case! If you want to be a big he-woman, go ahead. But you're not going to with me. Amanda tries to get him to talk instead of rant, but he's over it and storms down the stairs with his suitcase. As he stands in front of the door, poised, ready to leave, she demands, apparently without a D on the end, Adam, don't you dare slam that door. He opens the front door, looks at her and says, okay, and then slams the door so hard it results in a Rube Goldberg chain of things falling, which ultimately starts the record player playing Farewell, Amanda.
You also see that he shook the entire set too when he closed that door. It's all in walls, staircase, and all.
I'm like, there's a few door slamming events where I'm just like, oh, look at this rickety set as he goes, wah, 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 wah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, seriously.
And finally, we've come to Amanda's closing arguments. Back in the courtroom, they finally got to the stage in the proceedings where they are doing closing arguments. Amanda goes first, emphasizing to the jury that this entire trial...
Tamara, just prepare yourself. I know you're sad that this court case is coming to a close. I know you've really...
I'm squeezing my stress ball under the desk. You can't see that. So anxious that it's ending. Squeaky, 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 squeaky.
Do you need some tissues? I've got a box right here for you, just in case.
No. Amanda goes first, emphasizing to the jury that this entire trial is about equality under the law and between the sexes. She points out that there is the letter of the law and the spirit of the law. It's illegal to kill somebody, but sometimes due to mitigating circumstances, people who have killed are set free due to self-defense or defending others. Amanda points out passionately that the juries aren't there to verify if Mrs. Attinger shot at her husband and Miss Kane, but whether her actions were justified. Amanda is on a roll, Corinne writes, and Corinne doesn't agree.
I just meant on her own personal roll.
Right. Okay. I just didn't want to say that. And I was like, those weren't my words. Those were not my words. I'm not saying she was on a roll.
I didn't mean that she was like making these powerful points that were, you know, causing the change of feminism throughout the United States.
These next few lines I would like to comment on after I read them. Amanda's on a roll and she requests the jury to try something with her. Amanda points to the defendant and says, please look at Mrs. Attinger. Now keep looking at her and listen to me. Imagine her a man, a husband who is only trying to protect his home. And we see Mrs. Attinger and suddenly she has short dark hair and is wearing a suit. Amanda continues, now hold that impression and look at Miss Kane. Imagine her to be a man, a slick homewrecker, a wolf, you know the type. Suddenly, Miss Kane transforms with short brown hair, a cigarette mustache, and a cheap suit. Amanda asks them at once again to keep that image in their minds. And now look at Mr. Attinger. Suppose him a woman, the guilty wife. Does she arouse your sympathy? And Mr. Attinger transforms before our very eyes into a blonde woman wearing a dark dress and an unsympathetic expression on her face.
Can we just say that, like, the two women who were changed into men looked really good and attractive? And then when they changed Mr. Attinger into a woman, I was like, they did him no favors with the makeup job they gave him.
I know. I'm like, nobody wants to see that. No, that's just, that's cruel.
Yeah.
Nobody be coming home to you, Mr. Attinger, if you look like that, I'm sorry to say. Amanda brings it home. An unwritten law frees a man who chooses to defend his home, apply the same law to this maltreated wife and neglected woman. We ask no more than equality. Every living human being is capable of assault if sufficiently provoked. I ask you for a verdict of not guilty. There was no murder attempt here, only a pathetic attempt to save a home. Okay. I wonder how many times did they do a switcheroo where they imagine this person a woman and imagine this person a man in film. Like, I wonder if this was like groundbreaking.
Oh,
and that's why it was like so hilarious according to the movie poster. Essentially, your argument is telling me that if a man protects his home and shoots another man who's, you know, running around with his wife, it's justified more than if a woman does. But that is not the law. Like, every man that shoots another man who's going around with his wife does not get off. I think it was less commonplace. Like, sometimes if they had a really good attorney, they could get that person off. So she's acting as if it's fact. Like, if you shoot somebody that's cheating with your wife or that's fooling around with your wife, mm-hmm. then you're justified and you're going to get off because you're defending your home, which is a stupid argument because I don't think it happened all the time. And then why was she asking Miss Kane to turn into a Slick homewrecker.
Because she was flipping the gender roles, and it ties into when she was talking with her legal secretary back at the beginning of the movie, and she was like, mm-hmm. what if a guy cheats on his wife? She's like, oh, he's like a cad. And then it's like, what if the woman cheats on the husband? And oh, she's like a slutty whore, you know.
I get that, but then Mrs. Attinger in any of her gender roles wasn't shooting Miss Kane. She was shooting her husband. So in her defense, conversely, the man can shoot the man and that's okay because he's protecting his property, the wife. But then she's like kind of eking it around like Mrs. Attinger didn't shoot Miss Kane first. She was going for her husband and she was just an innocent bystander that happened to be there.
Yeah, I think that was the original intent. However, when she was testifying on the stand, what she said was she was trying to intimidate Miss Kane so she would leave her husband alone.
But was she wearing a bow in her hair? That's what I want to know. In all of her...
Well, she was. Therefore, she might as well have been wearing the nun outfit from Sister Act with the holster hips.
Anyways, okay. Well, it's your turn, Corinne.
Well, next, Adam tries to deliver his closing statements. He stands in front of the jury and states, Let me first state that the defense's arguments were sound. Mere sound. Waka, waka, waka. He doesn't say that, but he might as well. He turns and looks cockily back at Amanda, and she steadily holds his gaze. He pauses a beat before turning around, but Amanda has already worked her magic on him because he says, "Ladies and gentlemen of the jury." That is to say, gentlemen of the jury. Yes, we've had some amusing entertainment. It has absolutely no bearing on the case, per Tamara as well, and me also, in fairness. Of course, I'm going to ask you for a verdict of guilty as charged. It is up to you to stand up for your community and do the law that needs to be upheld. No one can feel safe living in a community where there are reckless and irresponsible neurotics wandering the street. Oh, those reckless and irresponsible neurotics.
He's calling Mrs. Attinger neurotic. Wow.
I know. I'm like, oh, does she like bite her nails?
Oh, my God. The horror.
I know. Armed with deadly weapons and their instruction manuals. You must deal with criminals. Amanda, who runs on different courtroom decorum than I'm used to, yells, "Objection!" She gets up and starts arguing her case, and Adam turns around, storming towards her. "Sit down, Pinky. I didn't interrupt you during your closing." The court reporter interrupts. "I'm sorry, I didn't get the last words. You said sit down something?" Adam tries brushing this off. "No matter," but the court reporter presses. "May I have it for the record, please?" Adam dies a little inside as he repeats, "Sit down, Pinky." The court reporter asks, "Pinky? What's that, a name?" Adam responds, "Yes." The reporter asks, "Whose?" Adam begrudgingly says, "The counsel for the defense." The court reporter writes a bit more, asking, "Is that with a Y or an IE?" Amanda, amused, clarifies, "Y for him, IE for me." And Adam tries moving things along. "What were you objecting to anyway, Pinky?" Amanda, outraged, picks up from where she left off. "I object to the depiction of the defendant as a criminal." And the judge yells, "Sustained!" "And I think we need Brandy and Kristen from Let's Go to Court with their one semester of law school and one semester of criminal justice to explain how a closing statement can be objected to." Asking for a friend. Adam finally continues his closing, but he's rattled. "As I was saying, the purpose of any summation in a court of ladies and gentlemen, let me begin again. What is there for you to decide? one thing. She was trying to kill her husband or Miss Kane or both. I find it a little difficult to proceed with this case without bursting into laughter at the utter plinicity of the answer and puny excuse, well, after the fact that she was merely trying to frighten him. Simplicity. I resent any neighbor that takes the law into her own hands and places a special interpretation of it all for herself. Mrs. Attinger has been coached by the defense. What we see here is not her, but how the defense wants us to see her. A sweet face crowned by a tenderly trimmed bonnet. However, I'm not taken in by this because I happen to be the fella that bought that bonnet, and here's the receipt to prove it. He pulls a crumpled receipt from his motherfucking pocket, stating, "Please show this to the court and the jury. I'd like to enter this as People's Exhibit Number 12. Amanda is smiling at the spectacle her husband is making until Adam says, "And also, Your Honor, I'd like to have my hat back." And he rips the hat from atop Mrs. Attinger's head, causing her to scream with surprise. Amanda objects, "Your Honor," and the judge bangs his gavel. "Mr. District Attorney, you will conclude your summation without any further demonstrations." I was like, way to make yourself look like an asshole.
Yeah.
Adam, Jesus Christ.
I didn't see any bailiffs in there, and I think that they would have like come forward when he went in to practically rip that hat off that woman's head.
I know. I was like, where's your contempt of court charge, judge? Come on.
Yes, yeah, seriously. The next day, the jury met and the Attinger verdict is in. The foreman announces that they find the defendant not guilty.
Ba-ba-da-ba.
What? The fuck? Miss Kane looks pissed. Mrs. Attinger cries in relief, and Mr. Attinger looks bummed until the press gathers around Mrs. Attinger in a flurry, and Mr. and Mrs. Attinger are pushed together by the press for photos. Mrs. Attinger sees her three kids and excitedly hugs them as Mr. Attinger poses happily next to them, looking like the perfect happy family. Adam congratulates Amanda reluctantly on winning the case, and Amanda says softly, "I wish it could have been a tie." There's a flurry of reporters around the two of them, and Adam starts working his way out of the courtroom. But before he leaves the building, Amanda goes after him and says that they're supposed to meet about the quarterly tax return tomorrow. He says he's up for it and will set it up, and then he slowly and sullenly makes his way out of the courthouse. This courthouse scene was bananas because those fucking reporters were worse than the paparazzi of today. Like, they were grabbing the woman and sticking their kids in front of her and, like, manhandling the people to push them around to get that perfect shot. And I was just like, Jesus Christ. Bailiff. Bailiff! You need a bailiff.
Seriously. This next section is called Kip is a Piece of Work.
Oh my God, this scene.
Motherfucker. That evening, Amanda is at Kip's apartment, which is across the hall, as we have mentioned before. Oof. I am so glad I do not live across the hall from Kip. Kip has invited her over for dinner and is trying very hard to put the moves on her, but she is completely distracted by the rift between her and her husband. So while he's whispering sultrily in her ear, which gave me the super shivers.
The good shivers or the bad shivers? Karen?
Bad shivers.
I figured. I just wanted you to clarify.
The ick. He whispers, "Why don't you give me a little kiss?" Huh? So sexy, right? She is doing a one-woman soliloquy on how important equality is in marriage. Finally, Kip makes his declaration. "Mrs. Bonner, I love you. I love ladies and women of all sorts, but I love you the most." Do you, Kip?
Do you
know? Hey, you know, Kip. Oh, Kip.
I know the Hays Act says that you can't be gay, but don't deny yourself.
Suddenly, it dawns on her what he's saying, and she exclaims, "What?" and turns to look at him with, "What the fuck, eyes?" Kip continues, "I love you the most. because you live across the hall from me, and I'd probably love anyone who lived across the hall from me. It's so convenient. There's no long trek back home alone. Like, when?
Wow. That's the best pickup line I've ever heard.
Way to make me feel special, Kip. Oh, yeah. You'd love anyone who lived across the hall from you. What about Adam, then? Well, okay, yeah, never mind. Yeah. Yes, we all know you love Adam, actually. What was I thinking?
If I turn you down, will you go after Adam? Let's do that and see what happens, yeah, shall
yeah,
we?
Yeah, because I can't stand you breathing into my ears saying, how about a kiss? What an insult, though. Like, seriously, I love you the most because you live across the hall. I'd love anyone who lived across the hall. Oh, thanks for making me feel special. Amanda's put off. Ugh, you're behaving like such a man. She gets up from where she's sitting and walks over to the window. Kip joins her and pours her a drink. And standing out on the sidewalk is Adam, watching their two silhouettes canoodle.
Can I tell you why I hated this part? Obvious reasons are...
Do you mean that you found a new and abiding love for Kip?
No. No, Kip was always awful, and I still hated him in this section. But this section made me hate Amanda almost as much, because he's over there obviously hitting on her, yeah, and she's just like, what's this? Oh, I'm going to go sit over here and keep talking like you're not doing anything. And then he follows her and practically nuzzles her neck, and she's like, what's that draft on my neck? I'm going to go over here and talk about the importance of marriage. And she's so painfully oblivious or just being super obtuse to what's happening that it is infuriating. I'm like, Amanda, you are obviously a smart woman. You cannot be this stupid to not know that this guy is fucking hitting on you. And you're just like, whatever. I need to say what's on my mind. And I have a captive audience. So even though you're trying to fuck me, I'm just going to talk because I need to say this. And it just, it almost puts me to the point where I'm like, that makes sense. All these times, all these years when men are like, no means yes, and you just got to keep persisting and pushing and pushing and pushing and pushing and pushing because eventually they'll break. They don't know what they want, because in the next scene, let me go ahead and tell you what happens in the next scene.
Why don't you?
Adam takes the elevator upstairs and asks the doorman for his passkey because he forgot his. The doorman happily obliges. He knows Adam and trusts him. Adam promises, I'll be right down with it. Thank you. Meanwhile, things are getting stranger, damn right, in Kip's apartment. As he's having Amanda and him pretend to be Lunt and Fontaine, a famous married couple who starred in over 12 Broadway plays together. They were known especially well for playing cheating couples. Also, potentially, that their marriage was more friendship-based than romantically-based, winky winky. And Kip says to Amanda, you'd be Lunt, the man, and I'll be Fontaine, the woman. And for some reason, Amanda agrees to this. And then Kip switcheroos. I meant the other way. And then he dips Amanda back in a presumed passionate kiss. So are we cheating on Adam or aren't we? I mean, you knew he was coming on to you at the end and accused him of being so manly. And then you succumb to his wiles by agreeing to this fucked up whatever the hell it is. Oh, Lord.
Yeah, the whole thing makes me uncomfortable, honestly.
The whole thing is, it's, But anything steamy or passionate is interrupted when the door opens and Adam enters the room stating, all right, break it up. He points a gun at the duo, and Amanda is afraid. She quickly goes into damage control mode as Kip hides behind her, and she says, Adam, listen to me. But Adam has had enough. Don't you handle me, lady. You said it today that anyone is capable of attack if provoked, including me. Kip tries to sneak off, but Adam threatens him. Don't you go anywhere. So Kip drops his champagne bottle and hides behind Amanda. As Adam states, him first, then you, Amanda. Amanda spreads her arms wider to give Kip more protection, begging, Adam, stop! But Adam waves his gun around. Move, Amanda! Kip begs, don't do it! Don't do it! And Amanda beseeches, Adam, you have no right to do this! No one has the right to! She trails off, realizing the gotcha moment Adam has created, and his face lights up and softens. He smiles, that's right. That's all I wanted to hear. And then he opens his mouth and slowly brings the gun towards himself. Putting the gun in his mouth. Kip and Amanda scream, and Amanda covers her eyes, peeking through her fingers just to see Adam with the twinkle in his eye take a bite out of the barrel. His mouth is full as he truly says, "Licorice. If there's anything, I'm a sucker for licorice." It was a licorice gun. Hmm. Amanda is pissed. She throws down her champagne glass, yelling, "I'll never forget this. Never!" Adam, full of self-righteousness, states, "Me neither. Because regardless of what you say you think, you actually think like me. That no one has the right to break the law. That your client had no right. That I'm right and you're wrong." Amanda promptly responds, "You worthless, corrupt, mean, rotten, dirty, contemptible, little petty, contemptible." She pushes Adam towards the door and he says, "You've already said all that. Go on back to your wrestling match with Kip." Amanda gives him what for, pushing him out the door. "You just get out of here. You think you humiliated me? That's where you're wrong. You haven't humiliated anyone other than yourself. You just revealed yourself for what you are, someone who couldn't bear to be bested by a woman." Adam tries to get her into the apartment to talk, but she's not having it and leaves in a huff.
In a huff.
With Adam yelling after her, "Remember, we need to meet tomorrow for the taxes." Fucking hell. Okay. We gonna unpack this shit right now or shall we do it later?
No time like the present.
So he's going to pretend murder to prove his point. And fucking hell.
So that's his rib, right? Adam's rib. Adam's joke is he pulls the licorice gun on them.
Oh, da-dunk-dunk. Uh-huh. Now it all makes sense. Now it is the funniest movie in 10 years. Wow. Okay.
So I have seen this kind of scene play out in lots of different movies. Not this actual specific scene where one person is having this very intense personal feelings about something. And so they're just talking and talking and talking about what's going on with them. And then the other person is trying to bring up something else, do something else, maybe profess love in the same scene, but person A is just completely ignoring them. And I think like, okay, it kind of makes sense. She's so upset about what's going on with her relationship. She's just like talking and talking and talking and in her own world while he is being completely gross and inappropriate. But then to make this whole Adam's rib work, they have to get them into a kiss. And so, like, this is really bad writing on their part because then they have Kip be like, "Well, let's pretend to make out." And she's like, "Sure, that would be a great idea.
You weren't just trying to hit on me for the last 10 minutes. Let's do it."
Yeah. It's okay if we're pretending to make out, right? Also, I'm wearing a ribbon in my hair.
maybe Amanda doesn't know that Kip's not gay, you know. Maybe she's just like, Kip, you're just like, maybe that's why she's like, "Will you stop that, quit it." It's like, I don't know, today's equivalent of your gay best friend trying to give you a makeover, like back in 49 he was just trying to like nuzzle you and blend in with the straight people. I don't know. So then when he says, "You can be the guy and I could be the girl," that's why she's so game. Because she's like, okay, yeah, no, this makes sense. Now you're acting appropriately gay. Let's do that. And then he at the last minute says, "Ha ha, I'm switching roles. I'm straight again." And she just, you know, whatever.
Yeah. It's just a bad way to make
a point. I hated that whole scene. And they went back and forth between the apartments and one slammed the door and then they were in one apartment and, oh shit, this isn't our apartment. Then they slammed the door and they went to the other apartment. And then
when everything was said and done.
Yes, as the set wafts in the wind. And then when everything's said and done, Kip is like bloodied and beat up.
Yeah.
And presumably by Adam.
But so they don't show that because of the Hays Act. Yes.
Right. Yeah. Oh,
they just innuendo it. Just like previously they innuendoed a very passionate kiss between Adam and Amanda in the butler's pantry. And Amanda walks into the kitchen and Adam then comes out following her. And he looks a little ruffled and he has a big smudge of lipstick on his face. Yeah.
Hot. Don't you dare show those kids kisses.
Nope.
That'll corrupt the shit out of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oof. So, you know what else is hot?
What?
Taxes. Taxes are hot.
Well, let's get to the taxes.
Ooh. And we're closing in on tax season right now. I mean, yes. Let's get taxable. I was going to say taxable. I didn't mean that. I meant, I can't remember what. My brain left me. However, let's take a moment to be aghast at how much money these people have as they go to their accountant. I'm not bitter, you're bitter, a.k.a. The accountant reads off a variety of receipts asking what they are. They spent $359 repairing a coat at the furrier. Once again, we mention furs in the movie for the third fucking movie in a row.
Oh my gosh, I'm going back to like a Pee-wee's Playhouse where they had a word of the day.
Yes.
Every time you say the word fur, ah, you're supposed to scream. Fur has been our word for three or four episodes.
So I texted Tam earlier this week and I was like, please tell me that, because we're doing Itanya the next week, please tell me Itanya has a fur in it somewhere. So
well, there is a pretty prominent scene where Itanya needs a fur coat for her skating competition, so we're going for four weeks in a row.
Oh, PETA is not happy with our podcast at all. I am sorry, Megan, who's a vegan. Like, it's just bad all over.
Not PETA friendly. Not PETA friendly podcast.
Oof. Okay, so the $349 repairing the coat at the furrier in today's money is $4,522.
They must have meant coatsa, as in like they needed to repair their coatsa for their Alaskan dog sled team or something, because that sounds insane.
I know. Well, the tax accountant balked at that. He was like, really?
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know we were laundering money. Okay, gotcha.
Seeds for the house in the country. Obviously, one needs seeds for the house in the country.
Right. A nice little garden, tomatoes and zucchini in season. It's nice.
Yeah. $478, a mere, in today's money, $6,194. Tamara's eyes are starting to water.
Well, they said it was the Bonner Farm. Like, is it actually a fucking farm? Like, do they have enough seeds for their 700 acres? Like, that's...
Adam says, we like plants.
Okay. Some shady shit's going down here. Uh-huh. Some shady shit.
Adam lost a bet, which he doesn't go into, but that was $100. Oh, just a tiny little wager of $1,295 in today's money.
Gambling addict. He's a gambling addict.
And then there's lingerie, aka lingerie. It does not say whether it has a ribbon with it or not, but I think this is dirty lingerie, so I don't think it does. $280, which is $3,628 on sexy underwears. Yes.
Okay, for a harem? Or do they possibly have a house of ill repute right next to their farm? Who the fuck? I mean,
maybe they had their house in the country was like the best little whorehouse in Texas.
I guess that would justify the luxury. But yeah. Some of these other things are quite... I don't think these lawyers are on the up and up, Corinne.
And the final payment on their country house. Because, you know, they wrote that final check that was in the little silent movie that they showed. Oh, it's just $8,740. You know, they had a mere $113,259 lying around in today's money.
Oh, shit. I'm surprised they do, since they spend $280 on lingerie, $100 on bets, $349 on repairing coats, and $478 on seeds. They still have a cool $8,000 left over after all that, and it's their quarterly taxes, not even their annually tax, their annual taxes.
As I said, apparently they have Kardashian money.
Like, I guess.
Jesus Christ.
So they have like five children that are in the film industry that are hiding in those closets or something that make all this money for them?
Little elves.
I guess.
As the accountant is listing these expenses, they both try to accept responsibility for them, and Amanda thanks Adam for the lingerie. When the country house is mentioned, their faces soften. Our final payment, we own it now, every scrap. It took us 6 years, but we made it. Adam says, free and clear, and his eyes start tearing up. Amanda looks down at him, her face filled with regret, and Adam wanders over the window to look desolately out of it. Amanda follows him and suggests, listen, Pinky, if we left now, we could get to the country house in time for dinner. He turns to her and says softly, you mean and see the dogs? She replies, and I think, motherfuckers, you have dogs in the country, but you don't have dogs in the city. So that means that you are like, oh, when we go to the vacation home, we're going to spend time with our neglected dogs.
Thank you. Yeah, who's taking care of the dogs while you're not there?
Obviously.
They're just out fending for themselves.
They have a housekeeper, a property manager, to take care of things.
I wonder if she's going to plant all their seeds for them, too.
Maybe that's why they were so expensive.
Oh, she's like, oh, yes, Mr. Bonner, I need some seeds. Yeah, seeds, that is it. That's it. There are $493 for seeds. They come back and there's like two plants in a pot. See?
They're kind of like folk. They'll wonky never know. Off to the side, yes. Leaning to the side. Yeah. Look at your beautiful garden.
Wouldn't it be great if they were that gullible? And like, actually, the whole lingerie shopping spree that they went on cost him like $38, but that the salesman's like, oh, the Bonners are here. I can get one over and just let me just tack on $202 more and just count it as a commission.
Like the groundskeeper goes to the grocery store and buys all these tomatoes and just piles them on the counter. He's like, look at this bumper crop you got from your tomato plants.
Really? Where are the vines? Died. They died right before I got here. Yeah, damnedest thing. Mm-hmm. Really cold front last night.
Yeah.
Killed them all.
But fortunately, I managed to grab all the tomatoes off of them just in time.
I wouldn't put it past everybody because these people are kind of dense in a lot of ways that don't make sense. So fuck it. Let's go with that story.
I just really want to know how much that hat was that he bought her.
Oh, my God.
That Mrs. Attinger started wearing. I mean, if he spends like $6,000 on lingerie or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I don't want to know how much that hat is.
Okay. So, yes, they neglect their dogs. Amanda replies, yes, and see the dogs. Of course, we don't have much in our freezer. Adam gets more upset. You don't want to go. The accountant is confused as to what the fuck is going on between them, as he's also very confused about their expenses.
As the accountant passes a receipt for his services, that's $3,472.
Oh my gosh. Which is, you know, a mere like $40,000 into, you know, that makes today's money. That makes sense. Yeah.
Accounting's hard.
Yeah, it is. I'm glad I'm not an accountant. Amanda ushers a teary Adam out of the office. Come on, honey. Let's go back to our house in the country. The accountant says, we still have more receipts to go over. If you don't finish, it'll cost you money. Amanda responds, oh, we don't care. Give them all the money. The more taxes we pay, the more we like it.
And obviously.
I know. And I'm like, yes, you need to be paying all the taxes because y'all's got the money. And Adam and Amanda walk out, leaving a very confused accountant behind in his office. He's probably thinking, I don't charge these fuckers enough. Jesus Christ.
Seriously. That night, they're at their country house, and Adam genuinely compliments Amanda on the job she did with the case. Amanda consents that he wasn't half bad either, and Adam announces that he's got some big news. The Republicans want him to run for the county court judgeship. Amanda exclaims, Pinky, I'm real proud of you, and shakes his hand while he smiles. Yes, that's me, County Court Judge Pinky. Adam happily walks out of the room to change, and Amanda grabs the hat that Adam had bought for her and Mrs. Attinger had worn throughout the trial. At first, she considers torching it in the fire, but then she gets a sly look on her face, puts the hat on her head, and calls out to Adam, Hey, Pinky. Have they picked the Democratic candidate yet? He comes back into the room, changed into his Jimmy Jams with the growly face on. And she smiles at him mischievously. I was just wondering. And he responds, oh, you were you? But you wouldn't. Amanda asks, well, how do you know? And he responds, well, I'd cry. You know the way I did in our accountant's office today? Amanda's aghast. Those were real tears? He agrees, of course they were, but I can turn them on any time I want. Us boys can do it too, you know. Gross. We just never think about it. And then he demonstrates how he can cry on cue. And she scoffs. The only thing that proves is what I've been saying all along. There is no difference between the sexes. He looks at her slyly. Oh, no difference, really? She responds, well, maybe a little difference. And he gets up and starts enthusiastically pulling the privacy drapes that surround their bed as he exclaims, well, hooray for the little difference. The end.
Yay!
Corinne.
Yes.
How many dry kisses, I'd love to know, are you giving Adam's rib?
All right. Let's clarify our kiss ratings. One kiss is do not watch / may put Tamara into a sleepy coma. Two kisses is if you only had three channels, you might watch it for a while before changing it to an infomercial and then inadvertently buy yourself knives and then feel guilty, particularly when they don't cut a can as advertised. So many regrets. Three kisses is, yay, would kiss this movie again. Is Tamara ready to make out with Adam's rib? We'll find out. Four kisses, the date night you've been waiting for. Larry, get that ribbon out of Tamara's hair. It's going to be a whopper tonight. And five kisses, if this movie were life, you'd have gotten dressed by cute cartoon animals, some squirrels immaculately washed your dishes, and you rode to work on a unicorn. My dry kiss rating is 2.5 dry kisses. Because if it were on, I would watch it for a little while, and then I would switch to an infomercial. And sadly buy some Ginsu knives. But I do think that this movie has some merits to it. However, would I watch this movie again? No. Are there a lot of other old movies that I really enjoy that I think are great that we will probably do over time? And who knows, may put Tamara to sleep? Yes. However, this movie, I was watching it and I was like, I've seen this once before. And I don't remember anything except for Judy Holliday closing her eyes and shooting around the room. And now I know why. I can't wait to get through this movie, and it just keeps on going.
Oh,
so I had some problems with it. I had some legal problems with it, although maybe the laws were very different.
Shocking.
In 1949. Maybe legal process was different, but yeah. So 2.5 dry kisses. But and there's some things that I'll talk about more when we get to the Four Musketeers of Diversity. But yeah, 2.5 dry kisses. How many dry kisses do you give this, Tam?
One! One dry kiss! Do not watch this movie. Do not pass go. Sweet, sassy molasses, if you don't know, there's going to be one dry kiss by now. I must not have been persuasive enough. If everybody associated with this movie is probably dead, so I feel comfortable saying I hated it. I disliked it immensely. I'm not usually this harsh when it comes to movies, but when it wasn't boring, it was infuriating and frustrating and confusing.
I might
give it two dry kisses because, you know, I would watch it for a little while if only to sit there, if I was watching it with anybody, to emphatically point out all the shit I hated about it and then change the channel to watch something better. I did not like this movie and was equally confused when I was reading all the reviews that said Katherine Hepburn and Spencer Tracy are at it again and their charisma is electric, and I'm like, seriously? That's what electric looked like in 1949? It's like if you have a beautiful Maytag washing machine that does everything under the sun to your clothes, and someone tells you, I'm going to give you this old washboard because you never know how good you had it until you don't have it anymore, because it's just that clunky and old and outdated, and I can't imagine how somebody could look at that and say that it's good based on the acting and the sensibilities that we have today, and still look at this movie with any sort of anything outside of just anger, confusion, and irritation, which is what I'm feeling right now.
And I will say that if you want to watch a Spencer Tracy and Katharine Hepburn movie, I recommend The Desk Set.
I've seen old movies that I like, and that's why I'm confused. I've seen black and white movies that I've thoroughly enjoyed. And, you know, you can see there's like a camp element sometimes, or you can see the times showing their face. But this one just was all over the fucking place. And the disjointed characters and how the couple would be pissed off, and then they get home and they're like, well, we love each other again. And Kip, who's gay but not gay. The set that's a house but not a house. It's just all over the place. So I'm going to give it one dry kiss. The first, I think, ever in ODK history. And well-deserved, Adam's rib.
Don't blame ya. So maybe we should move on to the Four Musketeers of Diversity.
Sure, why not?
How many musketeers are showing up to the table?
I would say, well, we've got body diversity, sexual diversity, racial diversity, and disability representation.
Yes.
I would say that the body diversity was evident with Miss LaPierre.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. She was a solid woman.
She was a solid woman.
Yes. There wasn't a lot
of it.
Was it
prevalent? No.
And the people who they said calling Judy Holliday fat was just ridiculous.
Right?
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, well, your husband's just an asshole because you're not fat. Yeah. Like, I had an ex-boyfriend that I weighed, 157? And I think I probably gained like 10 or 15 pounds.
Uh-huh.
And he made it a point to tell me how much bigger I was. And I'm like, gosh. I have never, ever, 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 ever been that small in my life, even with the 15 pounds. And so I'm like, oh, this is not going to last long.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And you're on the taller side. Yeah. No, that was no.
Yeah.
Yeah.
157 was low for my weight at the time. Yeah. So I was 5'8.5". Yeah. I've since shrunk a half an inch, but...
You're just trying to get closer to me, and I appreciate that. Thank you.
No problem. Happy to do it.
Yeah. So, yeah, I would say that there's like a pinky of body diversity in this movie.
Pinky with an IE or pinky with a Y?
Maybe both. Okay. Sexual diversity. Shall we talk about
half
Kip?
Present because of Kip. Kip was gay and he just couldn't live his full on gay life.
Oh, Kip. Oh, he's code. Oh, what the fuck?
Yeah. He's half present. He's half out, half in the closet.
Mm-hmm. And okay, so I did think it was interesting that they so heavily innuendoed at it. A lot of times in these old movies, they'll have the gay male character, but they always set him up with his goofy counterpart lady love interest. And I would say that this was not that dynamic here. It was more of a creeper.
And I'd be
vibe.
Like, take it or leave it. You're just convoluting the story, bouncing back and forth. I was surprised that this was co-written by a woman, actually.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
It obviously didn't have any gay friends.
Oof. Yeah, it was just... Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Racial diversity.
No, actually, okay. More
the black
racial
woman in the jury.
No, okay. More racial diversity in this than in fucking I Love You to Death. Mm-hmm. When she, and I know this is like stupid, but like, okay, it's 1949. These movies are heavily populated with pretty much only white people, or if there are people of color in there, they slap on a bad dialect onto them. They have them play a very specific...
Or put them in stereotypical roles.
Typical role, right. And so while there weren't speaking parts for 1949, they had a black man on the jury. They had women in the jury, which I'm just going to throw that into the racial diversity as well, just because of 1949. And when they panned across, remember that stunning moving scene where Katharine Hepburn brought all those women into the courthouse to prove her point that women are equal. Mm-hmm. So they pan across the women. There's an Asian woman. There's an African-American woman. Like, they actually had a few different races represented in there. Did they get up on the jury box and talk? No. I am not saying that this is some kind of, you know, United Nations of a movie. I am not confused by that. I'm saying there's like a Musketeer's boot, and the fact that this 1949 movie did a better job at representation than the 1992 movie I Love You to Death is interesting.
I'm going to say there's as much racial diversity here as there is good arguments for gender equality. How about that?
There are some good arguments for gender equality. There are also a lot of bad ones. Very
bad arguments. And things that happen that greatly discount all that stuff. Like, you're saying you're doing this, and yet your actions are doing this.
Oh.
And I can't stand the hysterical woman crying, and that's just, like, I'm not.
Not that you have any feelings, though, so, you know.
No, perfectly neutral. I'm Switzerland.
And then disability representation. No.
None that I saw.
No.
Nope.
No. Not even a person with a walking stick, as far as I could tell. Yeah. So we have like half of Musketeer cobbled together with a few different categories showing up to the table.
I'm going to nominate that we have our spin the bottle topic. The one that I want this week is left in a huff category, which is if they just up and left the movie, it would be so much better. I would have loved this movie so much more if Katharine Hepburn had not taken the case or Spencer Tracy had not taken the case. If either of them hadn't taken the case or this movie, I just didn't watch it all together. If I left in a huff, without seeing the whole thing through, I would have been a much happier girl.
I would have been quite happy if fucking Kip had left in a huff. Oh my goodness. That creeper of a man, Noah.
He was a close second.
I understand your point of view, though, for your left in a huff. Yeah.
I also thought of a banner alternate movie title, which is Let's Go to Court, ... but not with these two.
Nice. I like that. I think that I would rename this movie Adam and Amanda Fight Another Day with Each Other.
Also heard, like when I was reading the trivia and the fun facts, fun quotation, big quotation mark facts.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that they wrote was that whole licorice, boy, I love licorice, is like one of the best movie lines. I mean, I've out of like 1,000, I think. So it wasn't very high, but I was like, seriously? Okay.
No, I thought that like that whole move was A, so creepy and aggressive and manipulative, and B, so gross. And I did not like the whole thing. I thought it was really gross. Yeah.
I mean, I could just picture it. If Larry came in with a gun and started threatening and waving it around till I said something that was the point he was trying to prove, and then he took a big bite out of the gun because it was licorice, I'd feel a little less trusting. Just a little.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No. I'd be like, bye. Yes.
Oh, but then he's going to cry. And then I'll just be like, I said bye.
Yes.
I said, good day, sir. And just keep on going.
Go to the bathroom down the hall. Use their toilet paper to wipe those tears. I do not care. I've got other things to do with my life. Thank you very much. Enjoy the rest of your licorice gun.
Mm.
No. Nope, 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 nope. Okay. Tamara.
Yes.
What movie do we have coming up next week?
We have one that I chose. I Love You, Philip Morris.
Ooh.
Which stars Jim Carrey as Stephen Russell and Ewan McGregor as his love interest, Philip Morris. So it is a gay love story slash prison escape.
For the ages. And I haven't seen this movie, so I am looking forward to seeing what this movie holds for me. And I do love me some Ewan McGregor.
Buckle up. Yes. There's twists, there's turns, there's all sorts of things. And I love you, comma, Philip Morris.
If you have anything you'd like to say about I Love You, comma, Philip Morris, the spectacular movie that is Adam's Rib, or anything, anything else, we love hearing from you. And you can write us about Adam's Rib, the Hays Code, how much you loved Adam's Rib and are so glad.
How much you agree with Tamara that it's not a good movie. Who cares what the IMDb ratings say? There's crazy people out there, and I'm starting to build a conspiracy theory that somebody's just leaving all kinds of wonky reviews to build this movie up because it was not good.
Or anything about I Love You, comma, Philip Morris. Or anything else, you can reach out to us via email at onedrykiss@gmail.com or on the social medias, Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook, all at One Dry Kiss.
And that's one spelled O-N-E. And as always, if you can find the time to rate or review us, give us those high ratings, much like Adam's Rib. We greatly appreciate it. But in the meantime, we just appreciate you stopping by, and we wish you adieu with one dry kiss. Mwah! We'll see you next time.
See you next time.
Next.